And this is Closer Look in Atlanta. I'm Rose Scott alongside Dennis O'Hare.
According to the CDC now, more than one in every three American adults is at risk for diabetes, and 9% of America's population is already diagnosed with it. But type 2 diabetes is preventable. That's the adult form of diabetes, and it's Sarah Piper's job to help teach people how to prevent it. And she's with the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory. She joins us now in the studio. Welcome. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Okay. Type 2 diabetes, first of all, is it something when one hears about the kind of diabetes that kids have, it seems like it's something that they didn't acquire through environmental factors. What about the kind of diabetes that more adults have? Is it an environmental thing, or is there a predisposition for it?
Well, it's a little both. There's a variety of risk factors that we know are associated with type 2 diabetes that include genetics. Mm-hmm. So particularly if you have a mother, father, brother, or sister who had type 2 diabetes, that increases your risk. But then there are also other factors that are more environmental, as you say, such as our weight and our activity level that contribute to our risk.
So one in three American adults, according to the CDC, is at risk for it. Why has that rate gone up so much?
Great question. And I'm not sure I can answer it with all the expertise that exists. But what I can speak to is what we know for sure is that there's a correlation between the obesity rates that we've seen increase in our country and the rates of type 2 diabetes. So there may be other factors that scientists are trying to examine, but we know that is something that we can modify. And so that's the one we kind of hone in when we think about prevention.
But we also hear about pre-diabetes. Define that.
Great question. So pre-diabetes is a condition when somebody's blood sugar or blood glucose is higher than normal, but not high enough to meet the clinical diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. So you talk about the staggering numbers of people with type 2 diabetes, but the numbers of folks with pre-diabetes that the CDC reports is estimated to be 86 million. So that's, a disconcerting number to us in the field of diabetes education and public health.
Well, and that leads me to the next question, because it sounds like education and awareness is the key here. What are the challenges? And I guess I'm sure there's a specific population that's just not getting the message here.
Sure. All of those things are true. So education is key. Information is key. And that's both to those of us in the public space as well as to healthcare providers who are becoming increasingly more aware and active in terms of diagnosing prediabetes and talking to patients about their diagnosis. And it's also more important for individuals who hear this information to take action.
That leads me to this then, because someone listening is saying, okay, I don't think I have diabetes. It doesn't run in my family. So, but what questions should I just be asking my primary care physician? Because often a lot of people will say, I don't know what questions to ask.
Absolutely. So people need to, you've heard the phrase, know your numbers. So when you get your regular preventative screenings, asking what your blood sugar levels were, those should be tested at an annual preventative exam. So what is my fasting number and what does it mean? And if it's higher than normal, what should I do? And if you don't feel satisfied with the answer, there are other places you can go in Atlanta specifically to get more information about your status.
Before we even get to what you do about it, I think a lot of us don't really know what's going on in your body when you acquire or get diabetes to begin with. You mentioned obesity is linked to it. So if you're obese or if you're starting to be overweight, what's going on inside that puts you at risk for diabetes, and what does it do to you?
Well, probably the simplest way to look at it is that our bodies use our food for energy. And when somebody develops diabetes or pre-diabetes, there's kind of a breakdown in how your body uses that food for energy. So when somebody has pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes, either their body's not producing enough insulin to help manage the blood sugar in their system, or it has stopped producing insulin altogether.
And so what does that do to you physically?
Well, in the short term, there may be some symptoms people have, such as increased thirst, frequent urination, nausea, headaches, things like that. But oftentimes, particularly in the pre-diabetic range, people may have no symptoms at all. So that's why the regular preventative screenings are really important. Long term, what we really worry about with diabetes is the association with vision loss, with nerve damage, heart disease, all these, you know, terrible complications that those of us in the diabetes education world know can be prevented or delayed if we intervene early. So there's prevention from the pre-diabetes side, and there's prevention once somebody has diabetes. There's still a lot of hope for living a long, healthy life.
So someone listening is saying, okay, great. So tell me how to prevent particularly type 2 diabetes. What do I need to do, Sarah?
Couple of things. One, I think having that information is important. So seeing your primary care or your doctor regularly is important. Secondly, we know, we have evidence or research to show that type 2 diabetes can be prevented or delayed through modest weight loss and increased physical activity. Sounds easier than it is. We all know that. So there are programs. There's a particular program called the National Diabetes Prevention Program, where people can participate in this program. It's a year-long program to achieve those goals of modest weight loss and increased physical activity. And that's a program launched out of the Center for Disease Control that's kind of taking fire nationwide to help address this epidemic.
Now, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Are there any foods, and everyone's going to run out to the grocery store, are there any foods that might help in terms of preventing diabetes, or is that just too much?
Well, unfortunately, there's not a magic food. There's not a magic food, nor is there an evil food.
But foods that you can eat to help increase what your body needs to do to help prevent.
Sure.
Diabetes.
Well, I think the way I like to look at it is there are foods that certainly serve our bodies better in any realm. And fruits and vegetables, things that come from the earth, are ones that always serve us better, whether we're managing a chronic disease or trying to prevent it. So, again, they're not magic, but it certainly is a form of medicine for our body when we eat healthy.
No Oreos and fried chicken wings, is what
you're
saying. Again,
there's no evil food. It's all about balance and moderation. And that's what people learn actually in lifestyle change programs for preventing diabetes, is that all foods can fit, but it's about finding that balance that works for you.
And speaking of medicine, diabetes has become very big business as the rate of people at risk goes up. You see all sorts of commercials where for various kinds of ways to manage your numbers. And one of the phrases you hear a lot were, well, I tried, but diet and exercise weren't enough. Are we really trying hard enough, or are we relying too much on the medicines?
You know, I don't know that I can say a blanket answer to that question. I think we always want to try, I think just as an individual, most of us want to try things that don't involve medications first, but I think the reality is that diabetes is a progressive disease, and it is a disease that affects your body's functioning, and there is a point in that progression where most likely you need help, and that's not a bad thing. That doesn't negate the role of lifestyle change and wellness.
Are there different kinds of medications, though, depending on what your particular situation, your particular condition is, that you would need to talk about with your healthcare provider about, okay, do I need this, number one, and number two, which kind do I need?
Absolutely. I think that's, probably one of the great things and not so great things right now is that there's lots of options for treatment, and it's important for people to be their advocate and ask lots of questions of their healthcare provider about what's best for me, what other options I have. You're right that because it is a progressive disease, people's medication needs may change over time as well, and that's not an indictment on them and their management. It's just a reality of a progressive disease.
Sarah, you're a lifestyle coach and involved with a training program that focuses on diabetes prevention. So what's the common thing that people talk to you about when you're talking to them about changing their lifestyle? Because it's more than that. It's changing the mindset. And I'm wondering if the first thing is, oh my God, I can't have this X food or this. Is that the most common thing you hear?
Yeah, I think most of us think of a deprivation approach to making change. And I think that hopefully that's the relief they hear when they participate in a lifestyle change program or prevention program, is that, again, you don't have to give up everything that you like. It's about learning to find some balance and something that helps you sustain change over time.
So how do you help them with that? Do you take it maybe meal by meal? Do you ask them to maybe keep track of what they're eating? How do you help them begin to manage and make that lifestyle change?
Well, I mean, there's the approach that the National Diabetes Prevention Program takes is one of that it's a choice-based program. So it's giving people some guidance on eating healthier and getting more active, but letting them help kind of problem solve and figure out what's going to work for them. Because if I sat here and told you, Rose and Dennis, to do this, it might work for you, but it might not work for you, Dennis. So it's not a prescriptive, it's kind of people kind of discovering their own solutions along a healthy path.
You don't want to know what we have for lunch.
I'm not going to ask what you have for lunch. Yeah. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's people, the harder part for people is the behavior part. Mm-hmm. It's most of us kind of know the right things to do. And I, speaking very authentically, I know what I should do to be healthier, but it's the doing that's hard. So a lot of what prevention is about is helping people get past some of those kind of psychosocial stuff that gets in the way.
Less than a minute left here, but let's look at the future very briefly. Where are we with research? Are we ever going to see either a combination of things in terms of behavior and medication that could reverse diabetes or, you know, although one hesitates to use the word, cure it?
You know, that's a little bit out of my lane to say, but we've seen a lot of advancements in a short period of time around both the promise of lifestyle change for prevention as well as the promise for medical intervention. And research is, you know, can hardly keep up with the epidemic. But I think there's a lot of promise for the future. I think from where I sit, prevention is the key.
Sarah Piper works in diabetes prevention at the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University. Thanks so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.